オンナモバガバテバスデバヤ。オンナモバガバテバスデバヤ。
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Punishment and Reward of Kali, Text number 37.
Tanme dharma britam shrestha Sthanam nirdeshtum arhasi Yatraiva niyato vatsya Atisthamste anushasanam.
Word for word. Tat. Therefore. Me. Me. Dharma Britam. Of all the protectors of religion. Shrestha. O chief. Sthanam. Place. Nirdeshtum. Fix. Arhasi. May you do so. Yatra. Where. Eva, certainly. Nityataha, always. Vatsye, can reside. Atishtan, permanently situated. Te, your. Anushashanam, under your rule. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Therefore, O chief amongst the protectors of religion, please fix some place for me where I can live permanently under the protection of your government. Purport. Excuse me. The personality of Kali addressed Maharaj Parikshit as the chief amongst the protectors of religiosity because the king refrained from killing a person who surrendered unto him. A surrendered soul should be given all protection, even though he may be an enemy. That is the principle of religion. And we can just imagine what sort of protection is given by the personality of Godhead to the person who surrenders unto him, not as an enemy, but as a devoted servitor. The Lord protects the surrendered soul from all sins and all resultant reactions of sinful acts. Bhagavad Gita 18:66.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Shri Guru Dinadarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So here in this section we are hearing Kali speak. So far Maharaj Parikshit came across Kali, who was beating a cow in a bowl, and he was Maharaj Parikshit, in order to uphold dharma, was about to kill Kali because Kali was engaging in irreligious acts. So, as it's the duty of a king, he was upholding dharma and he was about to kill Kali. And at that point, Kali surrendered unto Maharaj Parikshit. So, in these two verses, we are seeing how Kali is surrendering. So, as from the beginning of the chapter, we understand that the personality of Kali was dressed up like a king. He was in the dress of a king, though Kali was a Shudra. So he had taken this false dress or this false designation and responsibility, though Kali was not qualified. So here, generally when a Kshatriya is challenged, they love challenges. So as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, fortunate are those unto whom such opportunities of fighting come unsought. So in other words, courage in battle, strength, power, determination, resourcefulness, these are the qualities of a Kshatriya, you know, magnanimous. So especially when they are challenged, they do not put that challenge down. So they will fight. So here we see that when Kali was challenged by Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Parikshit took out his sword and he was about to kill Kali, but
Kali immediately gave up his dress. So that is a sign of weakness. So a real Kshatriya will never run away, or at least they'll put a good fight. A real Kshatriya will either they'll be victorious or they'll die on the battle. That was the standard. So these days this is very hard to comprehend. So we see that a real soldier won't run away. And even we see that in the fight between the demigods and the demons. So when Vritasura, he was born in a demoniac family, he was a demon. Of course we know Vritasura was a devotee before. But anyway, he took birth in demoniac circumstances and he was on the side of the demons. And then on the demigod side was Indra and all the other demigods. So the demigods were in a bad shape because they were defeated by the demons. So again, then Indra petitioned Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu told him, okay, you go and fight, you know, you'll win. So he went and fought. And at one stage, the demigods were doing so well that all the demons were running away. So the demoniac soldiers and the leaders, commanders, were all running away from the battlefield. And then Vritasura got so upset. And even if they were running away, Indra and his soldiers were still attacking them. So there was irreligiosity on kind of both sides. So Vritasura chastised Indra that, you know, what kind of Kshatriya are you? You're killing someone who's fleeing the battlefield. And then he was chastising the demons that, what kind of soldiers are you? You're fleeing from the battle. You're meant to fight. If you win the battle, then, you know, we win the kingdom. But if you lose, you go to heaven. So this understanding was there. And so the rules were transgressed on both the sides, on the sides of the demons and on the side of the demigods. So we can see like that. So a real Kshatriya will fight. So here we see when Kali was challenged by Maharaj Parikshit, Kali immediately gave up his false dress and he surrendered unto Maharaj Parikshit. So it says, therefore, O chief amongst the protectors of religion. So here it's interesting, Maharaj Parikshit is called the chief amongst the protectors of religion. So, because as we were hearing yesterday and in previous classes we have heard that the duty of a Kshatriya or a leader, the foremost duty is to protect Dharma. And we not only, because a Kshatriya is a representative of God, so it's also called Anara Deva, God in a human-like form. So a Kshatriya is a representative of God, so they are meant to uphold religious principles, because that's what Krishna wants. So even Krishna, he comes once in a day of Brahma, yada yada hi dharmasya. So Krishna comes whenever and wherever there's a decline in irreligious practice, and rise in irreligious practice, then Krishna descends. So Krishna descends to correct the balance. So when this balance is tipped over, Krishna descends. So and also Krishna descends to engage in loving pastimes with his devotees. And in doing that, he also upholds Dharma. So that's one of the important functions of Krishna when he descends. Or when Krishna's avatars descend to the material world, they uphold Vedic principles. Because Vedic principles bring one to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, they need to be upheld. So in today's society, there's hardly any, you know, Vedic principles. Only Vedic principles which are being upheld is by the ISKCON movement, by the Hare Krishna movement. We are upholding religious principles. And the topmost religious principle is
Sarvadhanman Paritajya Maam Ekam Sharanam Raja Aham Tvam Sarva Papibhyo Mokshayishyami Maa Sachaha. Just surrender unto me. Krishna says, just surrender unto me and do not fear. I'll give you all protection from sinful reactions. So that's the topmost religious principle, is to be a servant of Krishna and to surrender unto Krishna's desires. So all other religious principles are more or less bringing one to this point. So in a civilized society, the duty of the king of government is to uphold religious principles. So in the absence of religious principles, there's just chaos and there is exploitation, there's no protection. So that's the main duty of a king to offer, of a government to offer protection from lust and protection from deviating from these principles. That's the number one duty. So of course protection doesn't just mean religious principles, there's other levels of protection also. There is physical protection, there is emotional protection, there's no unemployment. Yeah, then you have money. There's financial protection. There's protection from crime. There's basically to have a safe, so you feel secure and your identity as a servant of Krishna is strong. That's the whole idea behind that. So in today's society, we can see that protection, even on the material level, is reducing day by day. So the only protection our government leaders can offer is protection of economic interests. That's their key focus. So all the military and police and all the different government agencies are meant to offer economic protection of economic interests. That's what they're doing. And economic interests are only of a few people who are in power. People who are behind the corporation, people who are very wealthy and who control a lot. It's basically protecting their economic interests, and all the rest, others are used for their purposes. But in a Vedic society, protection would be offered not only to the human beings, but to all living entities. So there's the word praja. Praja means one who's born in the kingdom of a king. So whether it is a plant or animal or an ant, or a fish, or a cow, or humans. Everyone is offered protection. Everyone has the right to live. So today we can see that the level of protection is very low. Maybe, you know, human beings, they're protecting. That is also, you can argue that. How many are really being protected? How so many are being used? And then animals, you know, there's no protection offered. Only protection offered is to cats and dogs. That's the only animals who offer protection, and the few animals in the zoo. And the rest are, you know, they just have to survive themselves. And there is mass slaughter going on in today's society. So there is, we can see, even in domestic animals, So many of them are treated very badly. If you go to the puppy farms where the animals are raised, you can watch a documentary, Earthlings, and you'll see how they raise the domestic animals. If you go to the puppy farms, they are also like treated very badly, and they have psychological issues, and many of them just die, and they're living in terrible conditions. So it's very arguable that protection is hardly being offered in today's society. It's very unfortunate. But the main function of a king is to offer, is to protect religion. Because when dharma is protected, everything else will be gradually protected. So as Prabhupada said, we are establishing, ISKCON is meant to establish the head in society. That's one of the main functions. To establish the brahminical class or intellectual class who can offer guidance to society so they can change things. So here Maharaj Parikshit is called the chief amongst the protectors of religion, because Maharaj Parikshit understands dharma in and out. So dharma is very, very complex. In different time, place and circumstance, it is applied differently. So Maharaj Parikshit understands that perfectly, and if someone surrenders, like if like Kali was surrendering to Parikshit, so Parikshit didn't kill him. So this is very exemplary. So here Prabhupada says, a surrendered soul should be given all protection, even though he may be an enemy. So if ordinarily, if someone surrenders unto someone, especially a king, they should be offered all kinds of, they should be offered protection. Even though they're an enemy. So even if an enemy surrenders, if there's a battle going on, and the opposing side, they raise their hands, you know, we surrender, or they take out the white flag, then they are meant to be offered protection. They're not meant to be killed. So they're meant to be, okay, we won't kill you, we'll protect you. That was the standard. But these days we can see in wars, it's not like that. So even if someone surrenders, they still shoot them or they'll bomb them. And there's bombing of innocent civilians. The warfare today is very, very different. So Maharaj Parikshit is called the chief amongst the protectors because he's offering protection to Kali, though he knows Kali, because by the presence of Kali, and when Kali's presence increases, there's going to be all kinds of problems and Dharma will gradually go away. So as we know, there are four ages: Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. So Kali Yuga is the worst of times. So Maharaj Parikshit, if he wanted, he could have killed Kali right there and all these problems wouldn't have been there, what we are facing now. So the root is Kali, you know. We are seeing how it's all starting here. But then also Maharaj Parikshit knew that this is the will of the Lord. It's the will of the Lord that Kali Yuga comes. So conditioned living entities, whoever desire to be in Kali Yuga, are given that opportunity. So Maharaj Parikshit could even see that, okay, this is a higher arrangement. This is a higher arrangement of the Lord. Kali Yuga has to descend and Kali is surrendering unto me. And it is my duty to offer all protection if someone surrenders. See, we can even see Arjuna when he was with Krishna and they went in the forest. One time they went in the forest to do some hunting and just for some leisure time, and it was, I think, Maya Danava? I think what happened? They set a forest alight and then from that forest escaped, I think, Maya Danava. Kandava, yeah, I think so. And then Maya Danava surrendered unto Arjuna because they were Krishna, they were killing everyone. So then Maya Danava surrendered and Arjuna as a Kshatriya, he offered him protection. That's the point. So because Maharaj Parikshit saw, okay, Kali is surrendering, and though Kali Yuga has to come, so he considered all this and he didn't kill him. And now Kali is asking, please give me a place where I can live permanently under the protection of your government. So because Kali is being offered protection, so Kali is saying, wherever I look, wherever I go, I just see your bow and arrow. I just see you with a bow and arrow. In other words, he sees Maharaj Parikshit's representatives with a bow and arrow. So he's saying, where do I go? Because everywhere Dharma is upheld so strictly, there's nowhere for me to go. So then, as we'll hear in the next verse tomorrow, that Maharaj Parikshit gives Kali a few places to reside in. So, and Maharaj Parikshit also, he thought very deeply. So, okay, you know, Kali, we can't give him anywhere to go. So I'll give him some places, but I'll give him shelter. Kali can reside in wherever there's meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. So, but these things are not taking place in my kingdom. So effectively, Kali won't be here. So Kali is asking for a place where he can live permanently under the protection of Maharaj Parikshit's government. And Maharaj Parikshit is obliged to give Kali some space. And we'll also hear how Kali was given, Kali can reside in gold. And today we can see that in society, Kali has a very strong foothold. Kali's hold in society is very, very strong. Every corner there's a pub, there's a butcher shop, you know, there's a brothel, and there's pokies, there's tab everywhere. So we can, it's just not only Crown Casino in Victoria, but there's tabs everywhere. So we can see how much Kali has infiltrated in a period of 5,000 years. And all these things are considered to be very, very normal. But we should not, if we are working, we should not be directly connected with these four activities. Because Kali is presiding there, Kali's presence is very, very strong and it can affect us. So here another point Srila Prabhupada is making is that we can just imagine what sort of protection is given by the personality of Godhead to the person who surrenders unto Him, not as an enemy but as a devoted servitor. The Lord protects the surrendered soul from all sins and all resultant reactions of sinful acts. So here Prabhupada is saying that if a surrendered soul is given such protection, even though he's an enemy, what to speak of someone who surrenders to Krishna favorably? So even if someone surrenders to Krishna inimically, they are given all kinds of protection. If someone surrenders to representative of Krishna, what to speak of someone who surrenders to Krishna in a favorable attitude? So as we know, the definition of bhakti is Anya Bilashada Shunyam Jnana Karmadhyanartam Anukulyana Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. So that devotional service has to be rendered to Krishna in a favorable attitude, without any profit or motivation, without jnana and karma, in a favorable attitude. But even if one is performing devotional service in an unfavorable attitude, well, strictly speaking, it's not bhakti. But still, there is a lot of benefit in that. So we can see how when Kamsa approached Krishna, Kamsa was thinking of Krishna all the time, because there was a prophecy that the eighth child of Devaki will be the cause of Kamsa's death. So then Kamsa was thinking of Krishna all the time, while eating, sleeping, walking, sitting. He was thinking of Krishna all the time, but he was thinking in an unfavorable way. His attitude was not proper. He was inimical. We can see Shishupal. Shishupal was very inimical. And he was blaspheming Krishna from his childhood. And there's so many other examples who are inimical to Krishna. Even if someone is inimical to Krishna, they get benefited. So, if someone is extremely inimical to Krishna, they get benefited by getting Brahman liberation. So here we can see, even though Kali is inimical, but though he has surrendered, Maharaj Parikshit is offering all kinds of protection. So what to speak of someone who surrenders to Krishna favorably? So here Prabhupada says, the Lord protects the surrendered soul from all sins and all resultant reactions of sinful acts. So as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Paritajya, Mamekam Sharanam Raja. If one surrenders unto me, I deliver that jiva from all sinful reactions. So we know the root cause of suffering is sinful activities. Well, the root cause of suffering is ignorance. But one of the causes of suffering is sinful reactions. So whether we are so-called enjoying or so-called suffering, it is all because of our sinful activities. It is all because of our material activities.
whether it is manifest as good karma or bad karma. And that's why we are suffering. So when Prabhupada in Nectar Devotion gives the example, when someone engages in any activity, especially sinful activity, one develops a proclivity towards that activity. Someone steals, they develop a proclivity towards theft, and they become more and more inclined, and they're not even afraid of the law. Though they know they will get punished for that, and they can be thrown in jail for a long time, and in the next life they might get a punishment, but still they act in that way because that proclivity or inclination is very strong. So we see how sinful activities are the cause of suffering. And sinful activities are there because we have sinful desires. And sinful desires are there because there is ignorance of our true identity and our relationship with Krishna. So when one surrenders unto Krishna, Krishna destroys all the sinful reactions. And that's just a byproduct of bhakti. That's not the main thing. The main result one gets by performing devotional service is prema. So we perform Krishna consciousness, or we render devotional service, so we can develop prema. We can develop love for Krishna. But just by engaging in devotional service, once the reactions to one's sinful activities are destroyed. And not only that, even the inclination and the desires are destroyed. And gradually even the ignorance is dissipated. And Prabhupada gives the example of how when there's a forest fire, all the snakes of ignorance, they run away. So when the fire of bhakti is burning very intensely, then all the sinful activities and the desires and the inclination and the ignorance is vanquished gradually. And we can see that with Ajamil. Ajamil, though he did render some devotional service in his childhood, and then he got attracted to this prostitute and he fell down from his Brahminical platform, and he kept his sons, one of his sons' name was Narayan, and throughout his life he was calling his son, Narayan, come here, Narayan, do this, or let's go, whatever. And then at the time of death, he uttered the holy name of, he called Narayan, his intention was to call his son. But because he chanted offenselessly, all his sinful reactions were destroyed, wiped off, just by one chanting one holy name of the Lord. And that's the power of the holy name of the Lord. Just by chanting once, all his karma was wiped off. Then one could say, okay, but you know, if someone's karma is just wiped off once by chanting holy name, and they're still performing sinful activities, the power of the holy name is that if one chants it offenselessly, it can destroy all our karma, and even it can destroy what we can perform. So one should not think that is an exaggeration. If one thinks that's an exaggeration or imagination, that's an offense to the holy name, because that's the power of the holy name. So we can see that the destruction of karma is not the main thing. That's just a side benefit one gets by performance of bhakti. And we do not focus upon the destruction of karma. Like in some other paths, like in jnana or karma, maybe their focus is on getting rid of the karma and not performing material activities, so they don't generate karma. But we don't have to worry about that. We just have to engage in devotional service. We engage in the 9 items of bhakti, and Krishna takes care of the rest. So, but because we're not chanting the holy name offenselessly, therefore we will have karma. And it is getting destroyed to a degree. And we will also get reactions. It's not that, you know, we won't have any problems as a devotee. We will get different kinds of problems.
But we should see that as the arrangement of the Lord meant for our purification. Because we are a devotee, then Krishna takes Krishna takes a personal interest in devotees. So then Krishna might use the karma to give us certain reactions in order to purify us. So for devotees it's different. It is not just like, it is Krishna karma, it is not ordinary karma for devotees. For people who are not devotees, they are just riding on the waves of karma, good and bad karma. But for devotees, Krishna intervenes in the karma. So Prabhupada said, like, if you clap in kirtan, you know, your lines will disappear on your hand. So someone who knows palmistry, just by reading the lines on a hand, they can tell someone's fate. Or even by reading the lines on the foot, someone can tell your... Or by reading your birth chart, they can tell your future. They can tell your karma. It's a way of interpreting your karma, basically. But for devotees, it's interesting. I was hearing one lecture by His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. He was saying, the more advanced the devotee is, the less accurate his karma will be. He made an interesting statement. So the more advanced one is their astrological chart will be, you know, maybe not so relevant. So it's Krishna intervening there, we can see that. He was saying the more advanced one is, it's hard to predict that devotee's fate by an astrologer. It's not so easy. So Krishna, when he comes to the material world, Krishna is offering all living entities, you just surrender unto me and I will offer you this protection. And that's the highest level of protection. So today people are not afraid of performing sinful activities because they don't believe in the next life, they don't believe in the soul, they don't accept the soul, they don't accept the next life. So therefore they say, you know, what do you have to worry about? And it's very hard for people to appreciate what the Hare Krishna movement is doing. Like, I come across people who say, what are you doing for people? This is nice what you're doing. It's making people smile and a little bit relaxed. But what are you doing for, what are you really doing for people? They cannot see that what we are doing is offering people protection from the sinful activities. And just by engaging in any kind of devotional activity, they are getting purified. They cannot see what's happening in the background. So by someone coming to our centers and taking prasadam and hearing the holy name, and by interacting with devotees and reading, hearing some, you know, spiritual topic, they are getting purified, and they cannot see that. And it's very hard for people to understand that they are not the body, and our activities are aimed on the spiritual platform level. So it's generally speaking, it's hard for people to appreciate what we are doing, but still we have to do what we are doing. We still have to preach. We have to be convinced ourselves about the importance of Krishna consciousness and the effect it is having on people's lives, and we have to engage in our preaching activities. And though the results of our preaching activities might not be very immediate, you know, many of the activities we are performing, it will have long-term results. You'll see long-term results in society, like prasadam distribution. Very slowly it will change the hearts of people. From inside it will change them. So by eating prasadam, they get, their sinful reactions get destroyed. They get purified and they become attracted to Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So by distribution of literature, they are slowly getting purified. It won't happen immediately. So people who buy our books, tomorrow they'll be in, you know, prominent positions in society. And if they read these books every now and then, it will have an effect on them. And if they're in a prominent position in society, they can use these books to implement them in their whatever kind of work they're doing.
So there is the results of a preaching are very long term, most of them. So very few people take up to Krishna consciousness immediately through university program, or there are some programs that you get more results than others, immediate results. But nonetheless, there are. We should not get discouraged that, you know, we're not making so many devotees, or so many people are not being attracted, or they're not appreciating what we are doing. We have to understand that what we are doing has long-term benefits for people. Okay, I'll leave it here. Any questions? Comments? Yes, Prabhuji.
Just a comment on this, what devotees do for society.
Nice example, yeah. We can relate to that. I was hearing a lecture by Srila Prabhupada yesterday while driving. And he was saying, you know, our business is not to open hospitals and orphanages or things like that. He's saying there's plenty of those going on. We have to propagate Krishna consciousness. That's our main business. We don't care for hospitals. He said, let others do that. We'll just do this. And they'll be very much benefited. Yeah. Prabhupada was also encouraging the devotees, don't get discouraged, just do this. But also Prabhupada wanted us to, like, something which people can relate to is natural living, you know, self-sustained communities, and that's also about something what Prabhupada wanted us to do, establish farm communities. So something like that is a very powerful tool of attracting people, and they can very quickly relate to us. And when they appreciate that, they can even appreciate other things we are doing. Anything else? And people appreciate food distribution, that everyone can relate to food for life. Yes, probably.
If you want to please Krishna,
yeah,
you have to do preaching.
Yes.
Preaching is the most important thing. Besides the open service, preaching,
yeah,
is much more important because we are trying to elevate everything.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, Mahavir. By chanting, can you get rid of karma from previous generations? Yes.
Yeah.
A family is, if one is a pure devotee, one can deliver how many generations? Past? Huh? 21. So you can deliver 21 generations to come and in the past. If you're a pure devotee. Pure devotee. That's the condition. But even if you're not a pure devotee, still they'll get some benefit. At least your immediate family will get a slice of your share. They'll all still be benefited to a degree. Yeah, you're opening the doors of liberation for them. So they have to take up. Can see how so many devotees, their parents, over a period of time, have become devotees, or they've become at least very favorable and supportive. So, and they get, what we can't see is they get a slice of our share of devotional service. So their next life is definitely much better. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.